Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer, as presented by the Morbidly Beautiful Network. I'm your host Scott Murphy, and on today's podcast, I'm chatting to writer-director Jamal Hodge. Over the course of the interview, I chat to Jamal about his award-winning short, Morning Mule, from its poetic origins through its production and its festival circuit success. Plus, we get into how he likes to explore themes of light and dark, how his films tend to polarize opinion, and his key directorial influences such as Guillermo del Toro, David Fincher, and Antoine Fuqua. All of which, and much, much more, you can hear right now in my interview with Jamal. Hi Jamal, welcome to New Horror Express.
How you doing? It's great to be here, man. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you on the show. So we've got you on the show to talk about various things, your career both in filmmaking and in writing. But I think a good place to start would probably be your last short film that you put out, Morning Mule. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So Morning Mule was, it's actually a film based off a horror poem from the great Linda Addison, you know, Grandmaster Linda Addison. She's my mentor, and she basically was, I was promised that, like, I wanted to turn one of her poems into a movie, which she felt like was a radical idea. But Morning Mule was born out of that screenplay. And once that screenplay was born, it did really well. It won best screenplay, unproduced screenplay at the New York City Horror Film Festival. It was in Streak Fest. It did a finalist at Streak Fest. It did all these great rounds. And then I was like, let's make the movie. And I found Ruya Coleman. She really helped as a producer and as an actress to really help me put it all together. With the great Koshi Kiyokawa, you know, one of Japan's top DPs. We shot the movie. Great cast, Eddie Fay, all these guys, you know, everybody just stepped in and really made it happen. And yeah, we ended up with a great movie that did really well. I mean, it's a very polarizing film, kind of like The Joker, in that it's really extreme, the content. And it was made kind of like a poem, but also it's about what pain can turn us into, like, if we're not careful. How sometimes the monsters, we can become monsters if we don't heal our hurts without even noticing. And how people get stuck in traumatic loops throughout their life, even things that happened to them in the past, but always trying to go backwards to that happy place before the trauma, but that space no longer exists. So you see this person trapped in that loop. So it's a really intense movie with some amazing child talent. And it did really well. I mean, it won so many awards. I got the best director from the Chelsea Film Festival because of it in 2020. The Vanguard Award from the Hip Hop Film Festival. Best director from Genre Blast. Really got a bunch of nominations. And, you know, it's a part of something bigger because we want to take the same concept and do it for a series of other poems and turn it into a show for streaming. So, that was Morning Mule. It was Morning Mule. I mean, it's a very intense film. Not for everybody, but you know, it's not for everybody the way Psycho wasn't for everybody in its time, you know?
You mentioned there it was very polarizing. Can you give me a indication of like the kind of most positive reactions you got and the most negative reactions you got and what kind of where they came from?
Well, I mean, in my sick and twisted mind, you know, I'm you know, I am kind of a sick person. it's kind of like I wanted to make a movie where people would have to get up and walk out of the theater. So I was very happy and pleased when some old people got out of the theater and walked out and they wouldn't talk to me when after I left. When they found out I was a filmmaker. So like in terms of like polarizing, it's just a super intense movie. The movie is about pain. So it's also designed to hurt the audience so that you can feel the pain of the character on the screen. I believe in torturing the audience sometimes. I don't like to candy coat things or to coddle them or nothing like that. Almost not necessarily to the point of cruelty, but to the point where we tell the truth on screen. I like to tell the truth on screen. So that's not for everybody, but for the people who can stick around and they not necessarily like that, but they can learn from it and be moved by it. They left with like a revelation in their hearts. And a lot of them hit me up online and told me they couldn't stop thinking about the movie. And they was thinking, some people spoke to me about certain traumas that happened in their life and how the movie made them think about how that might have twisted them and changed them. So things like that. You know, we got a lot of positive responses, but just like the movie The Joker, where some people don't like to empathize with who they feel is the bad person, that movie Morning Meal is the same.
I suppose it's, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like again, that's a polarizing film, and I suppose. With films like that, with films that have like kind of anti-hero characters or characters that are you're following the villain, I mean, it does. There's like a fine line you can play there, because I do think there is a big difference between empathizing with a character like that and sympathizing with them.
Yeah, I agree.
So you can watch a movie like that and be like kind of immersed in the experience and kind of empathize by that character. But I think if you're like, I think it's a sign that you might be a psycho yourself if you're actively sympathizing with the character.
But yeah. But also there's a part, in my opinion, all humans are made out of the same stuff, just in different degrees. And then our circumstances might, you know, pull out the darker parts of ourselves more to the surface, but we all have certain elements within ourselves that's in every other human, and understanding that creates compassion. You know what I'm saying? Because you understand that the monster also lives inside you. So there's something to be said about that as well.
Yeah. Well, like, I agree to the point that every human alive has their breaking points and could tip over into something dangerous if in a certain set of circumstances, and that set of circumstances may be more extreme for some people than other people, but I understand where you're coming
from. Yeah, because most people, like, I mean, maybe 90% or more of the people we're more similar than different. And then you have those rare 2% of people that's just born different or born wrong, or the 2% that's born just right. They're so, just so right. But that's not us, right? That's like these exceptional humans that have lived, either for better or worse, good or bad. But those people are rare. Most of us are very similar to the average person who's in jail, who committed a bad crime or something like that. These are people that were just like us, like for the most part, but something broke them, something twisted them, something pushed them over the edge. Well, you know, as an artist, what I believe, this is just my own personal belief, is that people are much more the same than different. And it's like a small percentage of us are like these really weird outliers, either for good or for evil, whatever you want to call it. But what that means is that under similar conditions that broke some of the people we consider bad or deranged, we might also end up in a similar place like them, or end up doing, committing similar deeds. And it's something that we don't like to think of, because I feel like people, we like to feel like, you know, we're good on the, but we don't know ourselves in every circumstance until we're in that circumstance.
Yeah, I can definitely, you know, understand where you're coming from. And I think it is, there's a relatively small percentage of people who are maybe kind of saintly, and there's a relatively small percentage of people who are kind of natural born psychopaths.
Evil. Or whatever.
You know? And I agree that you don't know how you're going to react in every situation. And you might be essentially a quote unquote good person, but a certain type of circumstance might just throw you in a wrong direction that might cause terrible consequences.
Yeah. And that's what the movie is kind of about, Morning Man. You know, you see that play out, and it's very heart-wrenching to watch. But hopefully, you know, like with everything that I do, you know, my formula for making like art of any type is always trying to leave the audience with a question, either about themselves, their society, or what they think they know. Give them some sort of revelation while watching the movie. We go either, oh shit, or oh my God. And leaving them with a feeling, a distinct feeling by the end of the movie, whether it's anger, joy, inspiration, fear, disturbance, whatever the case may be, having a clear and distinct emotion that I'm trying to go for. It's like it's a question, a revelation, and a feeling. So I feel like if you have all of those distinctly in whatever film, writing, story, or anything that you do, your project will usually at least be good, you know? It'll be good.
And was it because it was kind of that, you know, you were talking about like the way people react to trauma and stuff like that. Was it that subject matter that resonated with you, to that inspired you to, like, in terms of the original poem, it inspired you to be like, I want to make this particular poem into a movie?
Well, yeah, it's such a beautiful and sad poem. And, you know, I like to think of myself as a professional sufferer, as a filmmaker. Yeah. You know, you're basically living a life of pain and uncertainty, no matter how much money you make or how much awards you get as an artist. But also as a child, I had a really harsh childhood by most people's standard. There's certain moments where I was homeless as a kid. You know, I've seen a lot of the dark side of life. I've seen people die in front of me. I've seen a lot of crazy things growing up. And I was always attracted to the pain, how people cope with loss and death. Kind of morbid, but I always found that fascinating, because to me, I noticed a lot of times that people who were closer to death were the closest to life. And they were actually the happiest people. Which is why I understand people that do crazy extreme sports or jump off of things and do all these crazy things, because the closer you are to death, usually the closer you are to life. But like, I'm always fascinated by like how like people deal with loss, and how do they redeem the pain? Because a lot of times it's kind of like, if you suffer so much, which is what the poem is about, a suffering mother who lost her child, how does one deal with that? How do you can never go back to who you were before that event. So how do you cope? Who do you become? And I find like it can either make you a more compassionate, better person, the pain of it, because you take that pain and then you redeem it by using your pain to help others with their pain, to mitigate their pain. Which mitigates yours, or you contain it, and you fall into a mental loop of feeling like a victim, and you become darker and darker, and then you can eventually become the pain itself. So that's what fascinated me about the story. Like, you know, like that poem, it was just this mother's trapped in a state, and you know, Linda wrote it so beautifully and so authentically. Then I was like, man, but what if this woman just stayed in that state and she got trapped and she couldn't get out, what type of person would she become? What type of person do people become when they're stuck in trauma? And that's how Morning Meal was born.
You said there that you're a professional sufferer. I was interested in the way you previously described the screenings of the movie and the polarizing reaction. And it seems like one of your things as a filmmaker is you want the audience to kind of sit in the skin of the characters, to feel that suffering, and that's what causes that polarizing reaction. Is that right? Am I sensing that correctly?
You want to
immerse people in the character.
Yeah, I mean, I want to immerse people in the truth, like that. That's that. You know, the thing I love about horror, the genre, is that people who go to see a horror movie they allow themselves to be more open to someone's interpretation of the truth or the world, and like it's a certain agreement that I can be brutal with you, brutally honest on the screen as a filmmaker. If you're stepping into a horror movie, I don't only do horror movies. I've done more inspirational movies, Jolly, a cartoon, different things like that. Believe it or not. And I do urban thrillers and I do horror movies. I've only ever done two horror movies. But people think of me as a horror guy. But really, I think of myself as a truth guy. If I'm telling a story that's horrifying, you need to be horrified when you're leaving that theater. It's horrifying, this story. It's a horror movie. It's not there just for entertainment or the fun or to be watered down and give you a little jump scare. And you hop out of your seat and you giggle and you're like, ha, ha, ha. You leave a little smile on your face. No, you're going to leave horrified. Because it's a horror movie. So I like to make actually horrifying horror movies if I'm going to make a horror movie. If I'm going to make a movie about inspiration, I like to make a movie that will leave you inspired when you leave. You know what I'm saying? So I'm really on theme. I like to tell the truth of the story. That's my focus. Not necessarily with the characters, the story itself. I'm there to tell the truth as a filmmaker. Not to candy coat it, not to lie. Not to think, I'm there to tell the truth. So if you're going to go watch a movie about something horrible happening, it's going to be horrible to watch it.
And it's,
I think that's my approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it. And is that the kind of horror that resonates with you the most as well? Like, you know, your description there, it doesn't seem like you'd be a kind of conjuring guy. Is it that kind of
the first Conjuring was pretty good. It was really good.
Like I'm not shitting on the Conjuring. The first Conjuring is a good movie. I'm just saying, you know, that kind of you know, that's kind of based on, you know, being a kind of like a haunted house ride. You know, like there's, you know, there's a safety there. You know, even like, though it's fun and it's, you know, and it's a good movie. It's based on that.
My type of movies would be like Silence of the Lambs, Seven, things like that. Like Fincher's Seven, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original. Like actually horrifying horror movies. Mm-hmm. But it was actually horrifying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it makes you question things when you leave, and it's deep. You know what I'm saying? Like it makes you. It affects you and changes you. You don't just go see it, have some popcorn, leave, and then never think about it ever again. It'll haunt you for days, for years, hopefully for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, there's a lot of films in horror like that. Do you think, I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast, and, you know, one of my things is that I personally think that you're talking about the truth, and I think horror is a good way to kind of tackle traumatic things in a way that is not necessarily entertaining, but it makes it easier in some ways than like doing it straightforward as like a drama or something like that. It gives this kind of broad base to discuss things that are are much deeper than the what is maybe the surface level of the horror movie, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do. I mean, we use, they say like every nonfiction thing is actually a lie, like every autobiography is a lie, but you could find more truths in fiction
Yes.
because we use lies to tell the truth, you know? So a lot of times these things are vehicles to bring a certain awareness or, like I said earlier, a revelation to the audience about something in their world or in themselves that they never saw it from that perspective before. So they leave the theater changed. And in everything that I do, I try to have a level of that in it, whether it's from a place of darkness or from a place of light. I like people to see a new perspective by the time they walk out of the theater, or maybe have them think about something they never asked to think about or want to think about. It's like we want to entertain them, we want to hurt them. We want to heal them. We want to give them an experience. Like I care more about giving the audience an experience than entertaining them. So I don't really care if you get mad, or if you get, are you happy, or you feel really good, or feel really bad by the time you leave the theater. I just want you to feel something, and I want you to leave with a new perspective. That's it. That's my job as an artist. It's up to you, and how, the way that my art resonates with your life experience or your perspectives. I have no control over that. You know what I mean? But you're definitely gonna feel something if you come to the theater and you see a Jamal Hodge film. You're definitely gonna feel something.
So you feel for you, you feel like you've accomplished your job as long as you're generating a kind of visceral emotion. You don't care if that emotion is positive or negative, it's just
Yeah.
that something has been stirred inside of yourself, and you've not just walked away and been like, huh, that was okay, or like, yeah, I didn't like that much. You know, it's stirred something.
I haven't made a film in the last 5 years where in the audience I haven't had a collective like cry. The audience hasn't cried together, screamed or cried out together, or said, "Oh my God, oh shit," or have shared a joint laugh together. And that's what I live for. I live for them having a communal experience around a design emotion. It's almost like designing a roller coaster. I want you to laugh here. I want you to cry there. I want you to say, "Oh shit," here. It's very designed, but at the same time, it's also, I try to keep it free for your own interpretation, a lot of it, with a lot of moments of silence, a lot of moments where there's no dialogue to interfere with the audience's experience of the moment. So, for me, I just want people to feel something. I mean, we go there to feel something. We go there to have a. People go to the theater. It's like the last cathedral, right? Nobody goes to church really that much anymore. You know, people don't really trust their politicians. So where do we actually gather outside of sports to actually sit down together and have a communal experience? It's at the theater. It's at the movie theater. It's the last cathedral, and the ministry is on the screen. And when people sit down together there and stuff like that, they allow you as an artist to minister to them, to tell them something, and they give a communal experience. So it's kind of like we're almost like the high priest of the modern age, the artists, the directors, the storytellers. So we have almost like a sacred duty, I feel like, to give people what they're there for. To give them a uniform experience. The sermon is not always going to be, you're not always going to like the sermon. It's not always going to make you happy, but you're always going to leave feeling something in your heart, like hopefully, you know? So that's why I feel it's my responsibility as an artist in this time where people have grown so apart in their own bubbles, you know? That's like the one place where they all come together to kind of give like a communal experience. When they're online, they're in their own social bubbles, their own belief bubbles, where everybody agrees with them and stuff like that, and on the social media stuff. But when we go to the theater, we all just sit down. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, you black, white, male, female, stuff. They're all having a communal experience together with this movie, this testimony. So that's how I see it. I see it almost as a calling, if you will, you know?
And do you think that, like, you know, certainly in terms of the type of horror you're making, that is about these kind of strong emotional experiences, trauma, grief, you know, stuff like that. Do you think in some ways that it can actually, by consuming this material and horror like that, it can actually make you more empathetic in that you're vicariously experiencing this trauma and therefore you can imagine putting yourself in that place? I mean, it's obviously not the same as actually being in that place, but just giving yourself that leap of imagination can make you just a little bit more empathetic.
But you know, Scott, man, I agree with you 1,000%. I mean, that's ultimately my goal, but every film that I do, not just in horror, because ultimately my goal for all the movies that I do and my ultimate mission as an artist is to make every human being understand that another human being is just as human as they are, just as alive as they are. I think most of the time we kind of walk through the world and we see other people as either objects or obstacles. Like you, or this is just a person that represents this to me, and I don't like that, what they represent. Or this person is in my way, or this person has what I don't have. It's like, it's always, we don't really see people as people because we can't feel their life. We can see them. We can't feel them like how we can feel ourselves. So I feel like when I'm making a movie, my whole goal is to create, I want you to see or experience this other person so that you can look at other people differently and look at yourself differently. Like, wow, yeah, this person is a monster in terms of this movie, but I see things to myself with that. I can see myself doing that. Those unspeakable things under certain conditions, if I'm not aware of myself. So if I see somebody who I consider a monster, yes, they're a monster, but they were once a human being just like me. And what type of pain and trauma they had to go through to form them in that way. It's like people don't ask themselves these questions. They're just so quick to condemn and to try to elevate themselves, judge and condemn. But I feel like most of the world's problems would be solved if we just saw each other as being as alive as each other. I think it would just change the whole conversation. So in my films, that's what I'm trying to achieve. You know, when I'm doing horror, I'm trying to achieve that. When I'm doing inspirational drama, I'm trying to achieve that. When I'm doing urban thrillers, I'm trying to achieve that.
And so you mentioned that Morning Meal was going to make up part of a TV series anthology you're making. How far along are you with that, and when can we?
Well, I mean, we've been writing some episodes and getting some things lined up. I don't think we will see it until next year or the year after, because this year we're just doing all the development and stuff like that, and then we're shopping it around. But I got some really good people working with me on it. You know, I can't talk about all the names until the time is right. But we got really good people on it. I'm really blessed, and the people who want to come on, and yeah, I'm really blessed. I'm trying to get Lee on it too. Lee Murray. I'm trying to get Lee on it. you know, shout out to Lee Murray. You know, say she's like one of my my mentors and friends as well. You know, she's awesome. Her and Linda, and Yeah. We got some good things going on with that, man. I'm really excited. I mean, I have a lot of projects that I'm doing right now.
Would you be planning to direct all the episodes? Or
No. Producer? No, I mean, anything that you make, you got to create a feast so that can grow, right? So I'm just setting up the dinner table, and I'm going to invite a whole bunch of people to come and eat. We're going to have different writers. We're going to have different directors. I'm probably just going to direct 2 out of the 8 episodes. And the rest, I'm going to bring in different directors that I know are amazing. Get like 1 or 2 like really established ones, and then give some other people a shot who've been ignored. You know, get some women in there, you know, get some marginalized people in there. Make something beautiful in the world, you know?
And you mentioned you had some other projects on the boil. Can you talk about any of them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have the exact opposite movie from Morning Meal coming out called Under Thy Wings, starring Keisha Barr. And That one is more of an inspirational movie about a mother's ability to speak life or death into her child. So it's a warning and a blessing simultaneously. The movie is very mother-daughter centric. This is another movie written from a book from Kareem Hayes, a series of books called Necessary Evil. It's really big in New York. I think he sold over 90,000 copies, you know, to hand and feet, you know what I mean, to people who normally don't even read like that. So that's how popular the book is. So we made a movie, and that movie's coming out later this year. There's also an animated
is that,
movie.
Is that a short film or is that a feature?
That one's a short film. It's a short, but it's like in a series of shorts because we're going a different route with it. Most people do their films in the old world, but we're doing like things with NFTs and stuff like that. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. We're really into the NFT crypto space. And then we have a feature film that I'm producing. I'm a producer on, associate producer called Pierre the Pigeon Hawk. It has great people like Jennifer Hudson and Will I Am and all these different people on it. And then I also have a film called Congregation that's a feature that we're also like I'm going to start hopefully shooting in the fall, but it might be next spring, not this spring, but the following one of next year. And then, you know, there's a series called Typecast. We know Lenny Thomas. And, you know, Jen, you know, it's just Jennifer, you know, Carrillo. We just got a great group of projects and stuff for our business, Hot Cinema. And I'm forgetting one thing. There's a comedy series as well that's finalizing itself in post right now. And it's called Ingeniuses, written by Brandon J. Shaw. He's one of the starring actors in it as well. And it's fantastic. It's my first foray into comedy. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really happy with it. It came out great. So, yeah, I've been blessed to have a lot of things on the horizon during this pandemic because, you know, I had the courage to still get out there and work. And things have been going really well. I can't complain, you know?
And do you think you always intend to like keep that mixture? It seems like you like the variety of making like horror, inspirational drama, urban thrillers, you know, your first foray into comedy there. Do you think you'll always keep that mix or do you think that you're bore into like just more the kind of one thing at some point of say horror or whatever?
You know, I do have like an eclectic skill set and how I like to tell stories, but I mean, for me, I'm just always trying to tell the truth, you know? That's my mandate. So whatever genre that falls into, I feel like I can handle it, except for rom-coms. I can't do those. That shit is too sentimental for me. But I can't do it, man. And action, I'm kind of just scared to attempt it. I have little action scenes in the thriller sometimes, but action is just so... It's just a particular type of mind and style to really pull that off in a great way. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm most fascinated by it, but you need like a certain level of budget and you need a certain mind, type of mind. So I don't know if I'll ever do an all-out action movie, but I'll definitely stay. My favorite realm, honestly, is probably like psychological horror or psychological thriller. Like how you say, like Silence of the Lambs or Seven. Those are like my favorite. So I love Hitchcock, and I like the suspense thriller. I like combining surprise and suspense. I love that combination, and it creates like this tension. I love tension in film. I love when you can't take your eyes off the screen and you're just almost hypnotized, and you don't know what's gonna happen. And you could be surprised, but then you're also in suspense. I love that. So I think like suspense thrillers, things like that, I love those, making those. But I also love inspiration. So yeah, I'll probably stay mainly in the three genres of thrillers, urban thrillers, I would say inspirational drama, and psychological horror.
And would you say that's your kind of main influences then? Because you've mentioned like Silence of the Lambs, Seven, Hitchcock like a few times now. Is that the kind of...
I love Fincher, Antoine Fuqua, and Hitchcock.
Okay.
You know, those are like those, Hitchcock, you know, Antoine Fuqua, and David Fincher. Those are like my guys that I kind of like look up to, like, you know, I really like their, and the thing that they all have in to me in common is their commitment to, and Guillermo del Toro too, in his own way. Like, cause Guillermo del Toro, he likes to show how the monsters are human beings. The monster is wrong thinking in the human being. I love that about movies. And all his movies, the monster's never the monster. The monster goes to human being or wrong thinking. And I like that.
That's for sure true. That's a clear theme in his mm-hmm. work, particularly, like The Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Even The Shape of Water. And
Pan's Labyrinth is my favorite movie probably of all time.
Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah, because it's the perfect blend of light and dark. And that's what I'm into. I like to use darkness to show light. And I think that's the perfect movie that epitomizes that. Fincher, I just love the master of craft. He's just the ultimate master of craft, the actual craft of filmmaking. He's a genius. Hmm. You know, how he uses different sizes of characters and the positioning of the angles to show power dynamics and relationships. He uses the camera to show relationship dynamics so well in his films. It's fascinating. And Hitchcock is just the master of suspense and surprise. You know, if you want to learn about suspense and surprise, you got to watch all his interviews and his content and his films. He's really the master of using what you don't see to enhance what you see. And Antoine Fuqua, nobody in the world captures the streets like him. Train of Day is one of the greatest director movies, in my opinion, of all time, of just the feel of L.A. and the realities of being a narc in these things. It's incredible. So, like, you know, I love these guys and their work, but for all for different reasons. But, you know, I try to take a little bit from each of them and, you know, add it to my own little pot of experiences.
Yeah. I actually rewatched Training Day last year, and it's really good. And that is one of my favorite Denzel Washington performances. He's amazing.
He's amazing. I mean, Alonzo, man, that's one of the greatest characters in cinematic history, in my opinion. Just the way he just set everything up and the little nuances, the little laugh, the twitch of the eye. You can see, you know, I love movies where you watch the movie one time, but then when you watch it again, the context changes. You know, you're like, oh shit, I see more. I see why he had a little look in his eye, why he made him smoke it, or how he manipulated him into that. You know, this is beautiful writing. This is beautiful direction. You know, beautiful performances. Just everything working in harmony, you know? Like, I love it. From the camera to set design, everybody on the same page in harmony, like creating this masterwork. It's beautiful. It's a miracle, man. Film is, you know, filmmakers create miracles every day. Like none of these things should even exist. It's so hard. One person could die, one person could leave. Anything could happen, and the whole film is fucked. But somehow, some way, movies get made every day. And it's just kind of like, it's an amazing thing when you think about it.
It really is. I mean, talking to a lot of indie film directors, it is a miracle that anything gets made, anything gets off the ground. And yet, hundreds, maybe even thousands of movies get made every year. And it's just really, it's really a mad thing. I was interested, like, your influences do raise an interesting question as well, though, because both Hitchcock and Fincher are famously, shall we say, taxing directors when it comes to their interactions with their actors. In terms of your own directorial style, would you say that you're lighter on your actors than your inspirations?
I have a more Spielbergish kind of approach, ironically. I'm looking for truth more than perfection. If that makes any sense.
Yes.
So for me, I mean, I believe in rehearsals, not to the point where you lose the magic. By the time you get to set, everything is stale and all the best performances are left on the rehearsal floor. But I do like to have actors rehearse within the space that they're going to be in, because it always feels unnatural when, to me, they just come into a space that they're unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. So if I can't get them there in rehearsal, then I'll have their call time be a lot earlier for them just to move around the space and feel the space. And we kind of help it, you know, it helps to create a more organic blocking and stuff like that. I do believe in storyboarding things to death, shot list, being super, 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 super ultra prepared. So we have a uniform foundation in all departments. And then after that, when we get there, we're basically looking for happy miracles and jumping those hot. Because basically my job as a director is not to tell anybody else how to do their job. It's just to create boundaries and the context and to create the environment where everybody can win. So that's basically how I am. My sets are very zen. They're usually kind of quiet for movie sets, and things are just constantly in motion because motion is life. So you want to keep things moving because that, you know, it progress creates happiness. You can work people hard so long as they're always moving closer towards a destination and they won't mind as much if they trust you and they feel like they're in good hands. So, I kind of run my set like that. It's very forward motion. People really love being on my sets. Like, some people want to come on my sets for free to help out just because they just like being there so much. So, you know, you have a good reputation for that, thank God. I'm pretty quiet director. Kind of like Hitchcock. Well, I'm not all running around screaming and nothing like that. I feel like I should be almost as invisible as possible.
Right, yeah.
So that when I speak, it has weight to it. I'm not just creating noise. Because ultimately, you know, I learned as a director, and this is the craziest thing that we never think about as directors, is that the actors, the gaffer, the grips, the DP, all these guys are on maybe 5 times to 10 times as much movie sets in a year than you are. Basically, the director is the position on set that has the least experience on set. If you think about it.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, like...
Think about it, for the most part. Like,
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, if you look at the IMDb page of any gaffer or cinematographer or, any of the kind of major film positions, editor, you know, whatever it is, it will be a much longer list than any director or most directors.
No, it's true. Because these guys are constantly working, right? And so they get under constant conditions and stuff like that. And directors don't necessarily fully understand how other directors direct. They have their own method, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of like you're the expert of your own method, but you don't want to get in the way of other people's expertise and start micromanaging them, because they know what they're doing if they're there. They just got to, they know they might... The main problem that you're going to have as a director is letting people know that the best midway might not be the right way for your vision. Especially the DP. DPs always want to do things the best way. They always want to make it look the best. But sometimes making things look the best doesn't fit your story in the way that you need it to. So basically, ultimately, you're the authority on the taste of the movie. Like, on what's right for the movie, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like balancing that out and communicating that. Because everybody wants to do their best, but they have to do their best within the same boundaries that you establish. So that's how I look at it. You know, when I'm on set and when I go on with my method, I don't think I'm too hard on my, my actors love me. I'm kind of an actor's director. I always give my actors one take for themselves where they can do what the hell they want. And yeah, we usually only do 5 to 7 takes and that's it. I move on. I'm not into like 30 takes, 20 takes, 50 takes. I'm not into that.
So you're very different from Fincher in that regard.
Yeah, I know that. Fincher be cheating. He'd be taking different parts from the frame from different takes and merging them together and stuff.
That is true.
You know, so Fincher be doing all types of crazy technical stuff, man. But you can't argue with the final result. I love how he uses special effects, like to blend. To create more of a hyper realism into the scene, to enhance the mood and the feeling more than to be in a visual effect, you know? Like, it's really like what he did with the girl with dragon tattoo, I think had as much effects as Star Wars, and nobody even notices. It's amazing.
I know what you mean. I mean, they are. I mean, there's no disrespect to Fincher. He makes great movies, and they are meticulously made. But then, I mean, he does have the time,
the resources,
the time and the resources and the freedom to do 50 takes and take the best angles.
We got to get in and get out. We got to get in and get out, man. We don't got the money for all that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely not. You're so super busy that I was wondering, do you continue? I know that you write poetry as well. And do you continue writing as well, or are you purely a filmmaker now? Because
I write all the time. I write every single day. It's part of my daily routine. I write every single day. That's the first thing I do in the day before I'm working out. I write every day. Like, I write a poem every day or a note or some line from a story that I'll probably use later on, but I always write.
And you feel that sets you up kind of right for the day? That's like your thing, that you have to write every day and that, you know?
Well, not have to. I mean, sometimes I might miss a day or two, you know what I'm saying? But about 4 or 5 days a week I'm writing. Consistently, you know, and I just feel like it's not necessarily about have to, it's like want to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more of a kind of, it's your favorite outlet, it's to write.
Yeah, it's just like it has to be a part of you, right? It has to be something that you get to do, like eating or you know, like in my opinion, you gotta be you gotta kind of have like an obsessive personality to completely immerse yourself in art, you know? To live this type of artistic life. It's like, you know, you want as much as possible because you want to be drowning in it, you know what I mean? In my opinion.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from. I mean, I'm not an artist myself, but my partner is a singer songwriter and also writes stories and stuff like that. And you know, like I definitely understand where you're coming from and that thing.
Yeah, I'm just really I'm excited about what the future holds and just to keep on making good content and to expand out. You know, go a little more mainstream. And seeing how the world responds to what I have to say. I mean, in my poetry, it's a lot different than, let's say, my films. And my poetry is very science fiction predominantly oriented. I've always been a space nerd. Even though I was born in the deepest hoods in New York, in the South Bronx. But I've always looked at the stars and wondered and thought and believed. So I love that, you know, I love how small we are in the scheme of things, but how big we are inside ourselves. I like that duality. I think it's fascinating.
Do
Do you think you would ever, like merge the two? Do you think you would ever take one of your poems and turn it into a movie, or something sci-fi?
Oh yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, of course. I mean, it's just for me, it's always been money with the sci-fi stuff.
Oh, of course, you know, you need a certain level of budget.
A certain budget to do it right. Good. So I haven't reached that level yet in my film career, but you know, it'll happen. It'll happen, of course, you know. And then, you know, there's also a lot of franchises I wouldn't mind doing an episode of The Mandalorian, or you know, Obi-Wan, or who wouldn't, right? Or you know, even Star Trek. You know, I watch a lot of Star Trek, Star Wars, all those things. So, you know.
Well, it seems like you have a lot of projects on the go, the things to take you to the next level, and I could be doing that sooner than you think, you know, with all the stuff that you've got going. It's been a great conversation, Jamal, and it's been great to have you on the show, and I look forward to seeing all the things that you've got coming out, the anthology series and all that stuff. And
I think you'll like it a little bit. Thank you, man. Thank you so much for having me, Scott. I appreciate you, man.
That was my guest, Jamal, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And as always, I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. Plus, remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. 5 stars, please. Anyway, that's all for this time, but be sure to tune in next time when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya.